Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey everyone, the Fetus Club is entirely fueled by your donations on Patreon. If you think the show is interesting or worth your while, do consider giving a little bit of money at patreon.com/thefetusclub. Thank you so much to those who already do it. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Fetus Club. This is episode 111, and we talk about libertarianism. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phileas Club. This is a show where we usually get people from different countries, different cultures, different backgrounds, put them together around a giant table spanning the length of the earth, basically virtual, but still, and we get them to discuss the news so we get different points of view on the topics that are making the headlines. That is what we usually do every month. Every once in a while, we get together with one person. I mean, I get together with one person, and we discuss a specific topic. Sometimes it's life in a different country. Sometimes it's ideas. And today, we are going to be talking about one specific idea, which might be strange to some people on the planet, myself included. I'm Patrick Beja, and I'm really happy to be welcoming today Brian Brushwood, who is basically the internet's most famous magician, right? Is
that that's very kind. That's the culmination of an 11-year plan. Is one day I wanted literally just one person to think of me that way, and if it worked, now I could retire. Thank you.
Well, listen, out of all of the magicians I know, you are the best one. And I also know of Dr. Stephen Strange, who is, my understanding, is some kind of magician. So that's not bad. Fair enough. We could be talking about magic. That would be a fascinating topic, and maybe we'll get to that one day. But the other thing I really I know about you is, well, apart from the fact that you're a fantastic person and human being, is your love of, well, your love, your belief in being a libertarian. That is starting really well.
Already we're off to I love this because I don't know if you intended to, but the way you phrased it, it's almost as though you're trying to reconcile, like, well, he seems like a good person, but he believes in libertarianism. How can both of these things be true?
You know, it's not, it wasn't intentional, but in my mind, libertarianism is such a weird idea. And I'm sure, you know, to Americans, it's already, to many Americans, it's a little bit far from the standard way of viewing the economy and the world and society. But you can imagine from outside of America, it's kind of a crazy idea. And I'm going to do my best to ask the dumb questions I usually ask. But yeah, already, how estranged are you from the common people in that school of thought? I mean, when you talk about it in the US, do people look at you funny, or is it, well, like...
So here's the nice thing is, what happens, what I think happened, or you know what, I'm not even going to talk about other people. I'll talk about what happened to me. Is I grew up in a conservative household, and you know, you're taught that these people are rational thinking beings, and these other people are crazy. They want to waste all the government's money and do everything terrible. But then meanwhile, I would have friends who would be very liberal, and they're all like, why does your family love to hate people based on the color of their skin, or you know, force everyone to be the same religion or whatever? And it wasn't until
to be clear, was it the case or was it not the case?
No, not at all.
Okay. Right. So there was fantasies on both sides of the.
Yeah, correct. And it wasn't until I got to college that that I realized that, you know, the shorthand of the left and the right is something very, very easy in rhetoric. It's something that everybody resonates with. Culturally, you kind of have two clubhouses, one on the left side that says the government should intervene a lot on fiscal issues, but should not tell people very much what to do culturally, socially. They shouldn't tell people where to put their genitals. They shouldn't tell people.
That's a great way of putting it, by the way. I think that's how I'm going to refer to those ideas from now on. Don't tell people where to put their genitals. That's
right.
That's not
and
a polite
thing. On the other side, you have the right that that on the one hand, they're like, I'm running my business. Government, could you please stop telling me how to run my business? Because I'm an expert on one thing, and that's my business. But unfortunately, that clubhouse also very obsessed with where people put their genitals, very obsessed about what passport they have, very obsessed with all the things we associate with the far right. And it wasn't until I got to college that I saw that there is no left right, but instead there's a diamond, a political diamond. So on the left, you have socially liberal, you know, hey man, you do you. Let's, be from all walks of life and let's tolerate each other. And also on that side, you said, but we have to stop corporate interests. We got to keep them in check. We can't have runaway whatevers. And also, if we're going to help all these people, well, then obviously we have to tax everybody. And of course, the government ends up getting everybody's business. So that is fiscally. Oh, there's a better word than statist, fiscally, whatever, government intervention high on fiscal issues, right. Government intervention low on social issues. And then on the right, you have government intervention very low on fiscal issues, but very, very high on social issues. You know, for example, the right was the one that was fueling the drug war or prohibition back in the early 20th century. And then I figured out like, oh, wait, you also have an up and a down and up at the top. You have, an authoritarian regime or a communist regime or whatever, which is, you know what? Best of all worlds. Let's have government involved in literally everything. And then you have down at the bottom, you have my little corner, the one that makes the most sense to me, which is whenever possible, let's not get people who aren't the parties involved. In other words, let's try to minimize government intervention in my pocketbook and in between my two pockets. That seems pretty good to me.
That is like the way you're putting it is really interesting because you had this little caveat at the beginning, which was whenever possible. And the way I view the way I perceive libertarianism doesn't have that whenever possible. I imagine maybe in the way that, you know, your family imagined liberals and your friends imagined your family, something extremely one tone, you know, this is what we should do and it should apply to everything. And maybe, you know what, maybe we should define libertarianism before we keep going. And maybe I'm going to start and you're going to correct me because that's the meat of the show. But before we do, it's really interesting already the way you are describing even the complex view of the political spectrum. For you, initially, it was two ideas, and then you have the diamond with different people who are on different places on that diamond, maybe. But for us, at least in France, and I'm sure in many European countries, the political spectrum is never two and not even four. There are, you know, it might be on a line and you have different intensities, but we have so many parties and so many different options that we never think of politics as two parties only. There are currents, you know, and of course you're going to have the left and the right. That is the case everywhere. And you're going to have, you know, the Greens and the far right and the racists and the whatever. But we never look at it in two varieties, in two options. And it seems like, I mean, it's pretty obvious. It's a common view of the U.S. political landscape. But it seems that that's where you were coming from initially and where a lot of people still are. And libertarianism for you is a way to escape that.
I would be really curious. I know that in America, and I might be misquoting this, but at some point I could have sworn I read an article that pointed out that the number one indicator of what political party you belong to is what political party your parents belong to. You know, there's this straight up tribalism, like, you know, we're a Democrat household and you're going to be a Democrat. And, you know, you're going to join the union and you're going to complain when your lever pulling job gets taken by a machine. That's what we do. Do you find it to be a similar situation just with more tribes to belong to in France?
I think mostly, I mean, we still look at ourselves as maybe we have three. We have, you know, the left, the right, and then the center, which is a viable-ish option, at least as ideologically. So you still probably inherit your core beliefs most of the time from your parents, not all the time, but most of the time. So I think that is common to more, you know, to a big part of the world. There might be a little bit more mobility, though, because you have those options. So, you know, your parents are, you know, from the Socialist Party, which is, again, not communism. It's very different. But from the Socialist Party, and you're thinking, they're a little bit too soft or a little bit too hard on these issues. So I'm going to shift a little bit to the left or to the right. So let's say we have a little bit more options within that inherited ideology, I'd say.
Yeah, and to your earlier point about the cartoon representation that a lot of people, both fairly and unfairly, have when they think of the word libertarian, oftentimes you think of a white privileged 23-year-old going on about how not even roads should be paid for.
Exactly.
Let me jump
in to describe what my idea of libertarianism is.
Sure.
So I'm gonna emphasize the description a little bit, but it's not too far from what I actually think libertarianism stands for as a whole. It is that idea that, okay, caricature, it's Mad Max. Everyone for themselves, and the society
or
breaks
Somalia.
Down, you don't care.
That's a popular one. Okay. Say, you must love Somalia.
For example. Essentially, it's the idea that the government should be involved in nothing, which is why, you know, it made me... It was interesting when you said whenever possible, and I wonder how big that whenever possible is, but the government should be involved in nothing. And exactly to what you were saying, so I'm not going to go on too long, but that idea that... libertarians don't want the government involved in infrastructure or in social security or in anything like that. And it's funny because when we talk about some of these issues, I've sort of been educated by my audience because I've often had libertarians who come to me on Twitter after a show or something like that and who tell me, you know, it's funny, actually, I'm a little bit libertarian, but social security is the one thing I think the government should be involved in. So I'm guessing my view is a little bit distorted, but realistic view of libertarianism, what is it?
I don't think of it as an ideal because I don't know what's right. I do think of it as a gravitational pull. I think of it as something that in general I want to go because if you decide it's an ideal, then that's everybody's favorite thing. It's like, oh, so you believe that we shouldn't have roads. You believe that we should have no army. You believe this. And that's a fun, easy thing to project on other people. And to be honest, there are people out there who have sat and argued back and forth and they were able to get to a mental construct where they were like, no, man, when somebody owns your house and the government comes in and says, I want to tear down your house because the rest of this mob wants a road here. I'm sorry, it's in your way, but we get to do it. We're the government. You know, that you can come up with a theoretical construct by which anarcho-capitalism might work, or at least for some number of people or whatever. But I wish that wasn't the first part people started in their discussions on libertarianism. I wish they would start with what do we agree on? Because that's the best thing about being in the libertarian space is, by definition, I could talk to any lefty and find an awful lot for us to agree upon. Things get a little bit weird when you get to the subject for example, gay marriage. We both agree that it should not be prohibited to marry somebody of whatever sex you like, but we agree for different reasons because they believe that it's the government is the institution that blesses unions between two people. And I believe that the very idea of government being in charge of what people can copulate in any capacity is inherently immoral. So you find yourself overlapping on things, but for different reasons, but that's okay. As long as you guys overlapping. Likewise on the right, you know, they complain about like this small business is getting crushed under these ridiculous regulations. Look at this. Now they want me to disclose that there's plastic in my facility for no good reason. It's a plastic shop. Of course there's plastics here. I agree. I'm like, yeah, that's dumb. They should not try to slap this one size fits all regulation on you. And now you have to waste time, energy, and effort to no tangible benefit outside of to make some bureaucrat and some voters who will never set foot in your shop feel better knowing that they controlled you. Yeah, that really, really sucks.
But okay, so I take all of these points. I understand how you find, you know, intersecting ideas with other more popular maybe currents of political thought. But in each of those, if you stop at that point you're discussing, it makes sense. But if you go a little bit farther, it starts to break down. I mean, in my view, at least, when you're talking about the road, I'm not sure where you fell on that one. You know, breaking, tearing down a house to build a road. I'm not sure if you thought it was, you know, something good or something bad, and I'm guessing that libertarians aren't super happy about those kinds of projects. But then for the common good, sometimes you need to bring down one person's interest or a group of people's interest.
Right. There's a moral way to do that. The libertarian answer to that, there was a Supreme Court decision, the Kelo decision, where what I think libertarians tend to try to be very cognizant of is that behind every government action is a monopoly on violence. And we don't like to remember this part,
right?
But the government has a monopoly on violence. The government has the right to murder at its will. And we say no
US
movie, they're not murdering people left and right. But for example, taxes, if you do not pay your taxes, sooner or later, people with guns will show up. And if you refuse to move, there are cases where people have been shot dead because they refused to move and they did not cooperate with the authority that has a monopoly on violence. So,
well, I would say ideally they put you in jail, which is already, you could make the case that it is a violent-ish action. I don't think you have to go to...
Yes, it's called imprisonment, and it's what we do to slaves.
sure, but okay, keep going.
So, regardless, you know, life, liberty, and the
pursuit
property.
Of life, happiness. Liberty,
property. Oh, when you are imprisoned, you are denied. You exist in the past, the present, and the future. The past is, or when you are murdered, you are denied your future. That is a denial of your liberty. When you are imprisoned, you are denied your present. And when you have your property taken from you, you are denied the fruits of your past labor. So in that, and this is the high-minded, feel-good kind of stuff. But my point on all this is, for example, let's say you want to tear down a house because you want a road because it's for a public good. I don't doubt that it would be good for the public. I don't doubt that it'll be good for everyone. But I don't believe that announcing how it's going to be and the justification of it being because you have guns is a very moral or ethical way to do it. It seems to me that there is some price by which they could reach an understanding. Or, you know, I mean, because if you don't own a thing, then what's the point of anything? Why even bother to call it ownership or anything?
Sure. Well, I mean, it seems a little bit of an absolute view on things. You do own the thing, but if you can never, I mean, you're saying they could come to an understanding if the person doesn't want to leave, and there is no price if it's money that will make them leave or anything that will make them leave, then you don't connect those two cities that need the road and that will improve everyone's life and the economy between the cities and improve jobs and make everyone's life better. Like, what is the... I understand you're saying there would be a more moral way of doing it, but sometimes there isn't. And ideally, right. The laws and the system of rules that we have are there to resolve those cases where you can't find a common ground, hopefully without violence.
This is actually a really good setup for the other argument for the position, which is we've described a situation where, let's say, universally, 100%, all of society will be better if this road is built, and you got one stick in the mud that refuses to give up their property or whatever.
Okay.
And everybody agrees, except for that one person, that the obvious thing is to eminent domain it and take that property. We've had situations like this. It was so obvious that we needed a telephone grid unified to go all the way across the United States, that at a time that there was a lot of tinkering and people were putting together competing standards and all that stuff, it was announced by the government, no, we're just going to have one standard. We picked this guy, it's AT&T, and they used the force of law, and again, that behind guns, to set up the AT&T monopoly in the United States. And we had 50 years of lack of progress. Then people started hooking up answering machines, and they're like, whoa, these are foreign devices hooked up to this monopoly. We have to stop this because who knows what'll happen. And again,
but those aren't incompatible. You know, it's not incompatible that you needed the government intervention to set up the infrastructure. And then you had a few decades where maybe things didn't move as fast as they could have. But if the government hadn't set up that infrastructure, then things would not have happened. And I guess we will never know. You can cling to the idea that, well, it would have worked better without the government getting involved. I guess maybe if we're going to an extreme, but
that's a really good point, because that is the real challenge, is the free market position doesn't get to weep for the thing that actually happens. We just have to shrug for the thing that never got a chance to be tried, you know. And we see echoes of this, for example, you know, because we spent all our money on established landlines, then America slipped behind and didn't get the chance to leapfrog over into wireless technologies. And we've seen countries that suddenly, like, you know, because they didn't move too early to do what looked like the obvious thing at the time. And that's the other thing is when you vote, what's the phrase? You don't need freedom to do the smart thing. You know, if you want to open a bank account and start saving for your retirement, you don't need freedom for that. Everyone's going to agree that that's just fine. What you need is freedom to do the crazy thing, like cash out your retirement to start a startup called Google or whatever. I mean, and in general, I think of it in terms of just regulatory barnacles on a ship. You know, it's like you put this brand new ship in the water, and it's just moving really, really fast. And bit by bit, in that industry, as it emerges, you just get more and more regulations. And it's not that the ship doesn't work. It's not that it doesn't get you from point A to point B. But now you got to wait for somebody else to build a brand new form of transportation, because those barnacles are never coming off.
Okay, I see.
That's just a bummer to me.
I understand that. I think I'm going to ask you about where you're okay with the government getting involved, because that is, I understand where you're okay with the government not getting involved, mostly. But that is, I think, the really interesting part, is where do libertarians say, okay, that's too much even for me. Before we do that, though, I want to go back to the idea of genitals, because obviously it's appealing to everyone.
SEO.
Yeah, exactly. You have that intersection, you said, with liberals, where you're telling them, well, we don't want the government to say who you can marry. But how far do you take it? For example, if some people want to be polygamous, are you okay with that? If some people want to marry younger people, I'm not going to say children, but... 14 years old, for example, where do you set the bar? the in my view, the libertarian is, it's almost as if it's by accident that they're going to agree with the people who defend gay rights or whatever, because really their belief goes a little bit farther into a territory where the people who defend gay rights might say, whoa, hey, wait a second now, that's a little bit too far, right? You see what I mean? So yeah. Where do you set the...
Well, let's take I think the problem is the or I think where we disagree is the immediate assumption that government is the best way to get to those good things. We want good things. Let's say there's a community around the corner and they have a practice of marrying off 9-year-olds. They pair them together and they marry them. We can pass a law and then eventually bring in guns and start it. And we'll probably
all. Why do you always go to the guns thing? It's that, like, I understand that's the end of the story if things go really badly, but I think that's an interesting view of it, because that's not where my mind as a European would go. It would go to the courts, it would go, but you immediately go to, and then it will end with guns and monopoly and violence. That's really interesting.
No. It's just that's what's backing it. That's what's backing those laws. Laws mean nothing without the guns, and I think it's immoral to forget that part. I think it's immoral to seduce yourself into thinking that you're just issuing a feel-good proclamation and people are obeying it because you were right the entire time. For example, let's do a more concrete thing. It was very well-intentioned to start the war on drugs and to get people to start prohibition. And as a result of that very well-intentioned public good, millions of people died. And organized crime became a horrific, and it's directly traceable. So good intentions don't cause things to happen. It's the unintended consequences that terrify me. And we've seen the unintended consequences of the 3-year-old who, and again, for as much as you would like to believe that guns aren't where it goes, you know, there's a 3-year-old toddler with his face melted off because they threw a flashbang into the wrong house on a no-knock drug raid. That's a real thing that's happening.
Sure.
And I think it's immoral to look the other way on that and say, yes, but no, we're really just trying to get people to be good people. I think those are fine words that deny the end of the line of where these feel-good policies often can end up. Not always, but they certainly can.
You will agree. Okay, let's get back to the 9-year-olds, actually, because I think you were getting to a point that that was really interesting. Tell me if I'm wrong. You were saying maybe society is going to be better off with people getting married at 9 and raising families.
No.
I was wondering, because some people do that, and you know, couples divorce less and they might be happier. I don't know.
No. Let's say there's 3 people. It's Patrick and Brian and we'll say Tom Merritt. And Tom Merritt. Tom Merritt does something that the two of us don't like. We could pass a law, because after all, we outnumber Tom Merritt, and mm-hmm. then Tom Merritt will have to obey because the force of law and behind it, guns. Don't forget,
we'll force him to. These guns.
But the libertarian.
I've been working out, so
the libertarian position would be: well, Patrick, you and me really don't like what Tom's doing. What do we have? We don't just have the power to vote. We also have money. We also have platforms. We can also make it very unpopular for Tom. We can put pressure on him. We can refuse to trade with Tom on a person-to-person basis. You don't need to go to pass a law immediately. And as a result, what we have is laws often only get passed after society has moved on past a certain thing. Because think about it, the lawmakers, they want to get reelected, so they tend to wait until they figured out what the society already wants and is already doing, and then they do the equivalent of stand out in front of that parade and act like they're leading it, and years later say, well, I solved that racism problem, didn't I?
Okay, but in the case of the war on drugs, which clearly I think now has at the very least been badly implemented, if you look at the alternative, especially, I mean, hindsight, 2020, all of this, now it's easy to say, well, that was kind of a bummer. But when it started, drugs were a problem, right? And the alternative, what was it? To just let it happen and let the drugs flood into the country? I mean, I can understand why people at the time were saying, we need to do something about it. With those very precious guns we have that you know, we care about so much. So what was the alternative back then? Maybe
the alternative is the same way we destroyed smoking. We never made smoking illegal in the United States. It's still legal everywhere. It's legal to buy cigarettes. It's legal for them to make cigarettes. It's legal for them to sell cigarettes. Instead, we used our other currencies besides the force of law, besides guns. We made it uncool. We spent money to hire very clever marketers to expose. We spent money on research studies. We spent money on marketers to point out just how awful it is for your body. We set up rewards and incentives that made it to where that's not very appealing. And now smoking is almost universally associated with the lower class status. And my kids are never going to end up smoking a cigarette. And that's all without using. Now, you can get into the weeds and say, oh, well, taxing incentives and all that stuff. That's fine. I would make the case that you probably could have done it without any of that either, because ultimately what happened is you had an argument of ideas and the better idea won, because at no point did the government come in and stop the argument. And the problem is, as much as it feels like announcing that cocaine is now illegal has stopped the argument, all it does is drive the argument underground and result in horrific, perverse consequences.
So the idea, I think, yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it.
And let's take something even worse. If you want to really get me, say, what about slaves, Brian? What about slavery? And the answer is,
hey, Brian, what about slaves? What about slavery?
We could have handled it the way the entire rest of the world did, rather than having the bloodiest war in our history, using nothing but our guns to kill brother against brother. Instead, they, as a society, they bought out moneyed interests, bought the freedom of slaves and set free. In the case, now you say, oh, but it was the government in England that paid for all the slaves to be free. And I will say, yes, because that is the point at which that story ended. But I also believe it might have been possible, or probably would have been inevitable, that some moneyed interest would have done it themselves.
You're making me pause, which is I'm never happy about, because that means I'm considering ideas I didn't like or still don't like, but at least I'm considering them. Okay.
And let's dial back, like on the roads thing, where it's like, I like roads. I like to drive on them. I think they're fine institutions. unfortunately, when all you care about is when you have the force of law, you get to say, there's got to be a road here. Everyone want roads. Say, yeah. And then they all say, yeah. And then a road gets made and everybody agrees it was the right decision. And it's not for 20 or 30 years later that you find out that that contract was awarded to this guy's cousin, and that there was no competitive bids, and it cost a bazillion dollars, and that it wasn't made as well as possible. And we have cases now where best practices, more libertarian-leaning practices, are, okay, we're going to budget money for a road. We don't care, you know, and we're going to put it out to bid. We're going to have competitive bids, and we're going to have private institutions lining up to outcompete each other for this money. Likewise, the American education institution, unfortunately, has this thing where we decide that wherever you live, we decide by geography, will determine what school you're going to go to, because everyone's got to go to school, and there's only one state school run institution. And if you live in this area, you got to go to this school. Meanwhile, over in Belgium, they're kicking our asses because they tie the money to the child. And they say, here is $10,000 per year to spend on school. Go to whatever school you want. So what do you think happens? A lot of people compete to make sure that they have reputations of outstanding academics. They attract parents by pointing out how little violence there are. If somebody is a religious, then they say, we also pray three times a day. That's not a problem, because we're allowed to do that, because the money is tied to you and you get to spend it to whatever way you want. But meanwhile, we don't get that. And now we're at a place where we're so entrenched, and there are very powerful unions that would don't want the money attached to the child. And so the proposals like school vouchers get shut down. And look, I'm not going to say we're in a hellscape. I'm not going to say we're doing terrible. But I do wistfully wonder what everything would look like if the money was tied to the child and not to the district and the school.
Okay. All of these are frustratingly interesting. So just to get back to, so I have an idea of what you would envision in a libertarian solution to the drug problem. Drugs would be legal, kind of like pot is getting now. They would be legal. and you could open a cocaine shop, and the power of marketing would make them look uncool. I'm simplifying, but it would be legal to sell drugs. Is that
somebody? Let's say you open your. Let's say, and again, everything goes in stages, right? So what I think really will happen is we're having a discussion about pot, and then what I suspect will come next is a stepping away from criminalization of harder drugs like cocaine, and instead the opening of a dialogue of looking at it as a public health problem, which, you know, then now all of a sudden, you know, that changes sentencing, that sentence changes incentives. Now, if you have cocaine on you and a cop pulls you over, now you're not incentivized to consider shooting the cop because you can't afford to go to jail for 10 years. And instead, maybe, you know, you'll be less violent because, you know, if you're caught with it, you're going to go into a treatment program and all that. But even if we waved a wand and all of a sudden everything was legal, or at least in drugs, let's say, you know, enterprising entrepreneur Patrick Beja opens up a coke shop. But then meanwhile, both Tom Merritt and Brian Brushwood think that coke is the worst of all the drugs. And now, again, rather than us voting, because again, we can outvote Patrick Beja, we say, well, what do you got? Well, I got a platform and I got money. Let's say we open up next to it a free clinic, you know, that demonizes it. Let's buy ads. Let's create a better alternative. Let's, you know, there are options that don't involve the government. There are possibilities.
What happens when everyone thinks the best option is to do the drugs, though? You know, like in every example we've been taking, the people, like the good people, Patrick Beja and Brian Brushwood, have the right idea. But it seems to me that in many cases, the majority or the people who have the power or who have the money or whatever might not have the right idea.
And that's that is a really good question. And the good if I run a government, then I have to have an answer for that. But if I believe that free minds engaged in spiriting debate will yield the answer, then I don't have to know right now what the right answer is. Just that we can agree that there needs to that we need to work towards a right answer.
So basically, libertarians are unbridled optimists. They just think that people working together will create an idea, the best solution. Because
I'm not even going to say they will, but I'm going to say that they tend to, right?
So it's more likely than the government trying to engineer it.
For example, take a look at Hong Kong. Hong Kong was a curious political artifact that was owned by the British, but they didn't want to do anything with it. It had zero natural resources. It was rock and a port, and it was owned by Britain. And they said, what are we going to do? And they said, we're going to do one thing, and that is keep the peace and enforce contract law. So as a result, Hong Kong had one resource, and that was the fact that if you did a deal in Hong Kong, you're going to get whatever you wrote down, whatever you agreed to was going to go through. And then that's what developed into stuff. So like something like Somalia, the worst places in the world are not places with no government. The worst places are the one where there's not even enough government to enforce agreements. I think the ideal sweet spot for libertarianism is all parties agree to everything and that there's some adult monopoly of force that is able to enforce that agreement. And I think where we run into trouble with the lawlessness is a Somalia versus a Hong Kong. In Hong Kong, you could go and by signing one sheet of paper, you can open a business and you can, as good or as bad an idea as it is, no matter whose brother it competes with, no matter how insane or sensible it is, they don't care. They say the position is you want to do it, zero money. Hope best of luck to you. We'll enforce the contracts that you do. And a lot of wonderful things come out of that. And a lot of not wonderful things come from, number one, well-intentioned sweeping policies over applied. I'll tell you this much, libertarians, we could eventually argue about the roads. Can we start by agreeing on wars, about these insane wars about that we're fighting all over the place, these military presences trying to put our one size fit all solutions throughout the globe. I don't know. That's my vibe on all that.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is an example of where I would say, yes, sure. Maybe all of the wars that have been happening in the past few decades weren't ideal, but some of them were necessary. And it seems like you're saying, you know, your solution would get us to never do anything like that. And sometimes you have to.
And again, this is the universal argument is like, well, if we took this to its extreme, here's a bad situation. But the good news is we're never going to get there. We're never going to get to any of those extreme situations. We're never going to get to a place where we're going to tear up the roads. We're never going to get to a place where there are no wars fought. We're never going to get to a place where somebody's allowed to raise a child without educating them. So you don't have to worry about that. So if that's the part of libertarianism that scares you,
why?
It'll never happen.
Why? I mean, sure, the no wars thing. So you're saying even in the libertarian view, some wars you have to fight is what you're saying.
Well, that's an interesting question on what is a just war. That might be above my pay grade, but also. Not anything I can do anything about at this point, but I can do something making sure that my school board doesn't award a contract to just one person, but instead puts it out to bid for five different people.
Okay, so you're saying let's talk about what we can have an influence on at the moment, and then we'll talk about the bigger things later.
Yeah, and I believe there are, like, for example, a dude went to jail, full-on jail, for selling silver coins. He said, I don't like the idea of the government, printing up money and all that stuff. So I'm going to do something about it. I've got some silver here. I'm going to melt it down. And the price of silver is about $25 an ounce. So here's an ounce sized coin of silver. And it says Liberty on it. And it's got $25. And if you go to the website, it explains, you know, this is a price tag. This is a approximation of value. You do with it whatever you want and you trade it.
But you understand why it happened, right? You understand that in order for the monetary system to work, the government is the one who has to print money. And this was kind of, yeah, it's not money. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And you understand why this went to the extreme of putting the guy in jail. I don't know the story, but I'm guessing.
But by that logic, why wouldn't you put the whoever you can use in Bitcoin in jail? What's the difference?
I mean, the Bitcoins aren't set as are they, you know, property or currency yet. Actually, most government seems to be saying that they're property. So it's not really the same thing.
And a piece of silver is property. Cover it with a Bible verse or $9 billion and a novelty picture of George Bush. It seems like you got the right to do whatever nutty thing you want. And if people like it and use it, then that works. But, you know, again,
sure.
What we have is the end of the story is somebody did a thing and now there's no chance to find out what would have happened. Because realistically, what would have happened is somebody would say, hey, this guy's putting the numbers $25 on there. If you see one of these, punch him in the nose or don't take him.
Punch him in the nose would be a problem already. But because as you implied many, or as you said many times, again, in order for society to work, most people seem to think that the government has to have the monopoly on violence. So correct way of doing it is call a cop and tell them to punch him in the nose. So, because that's much better.
The best one involves no punching of noses and instead says, you know, start writing pamphlets, start telling friends what a big phony and fraud this is, and then get it resolved that way.
Well, I do love that every scenario that you describe always seems to go the best way possible. That's what I'm understanding from everything you're explaining. Maybe I'm viewing it a little bit cynically, but
it won't go the best way possible. It'll go wrong a lot of different ways. It took a lot of false starts to convince people to stop smoking. It wasn't enough to just have doctors, issue reports saying it, because then the moneyed interests paid doctors to say doctors prefer Camels. There will be setbacks, there will be failures along the way, but we got there, and we got there effectively, and we got there without shooting people. And I thought that was that's pretty great. So don't confuse my position with it is unstoppable that there will be failure. There'll certainly be failure,
right?
But it's not inevitable that there will be success. But I'm saying you can get there without without the clumsy and you know what they say when you're holding a hammer, everything's a nail, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No. And to be fair, it is absolutely the case that it's not like the governments get it right every time. I think if the one thing that every political current agrees on is that the government gets it wrong many times. So I get your point. So since we're on governments, what do you think the government should be in charge of? That's the I think the really interesting thing, because from what I understand until now, it seems like it's nothing, but you were saying whenever possible. So
No. The government should guarantee the maximum amount of life, liberty, and property. It protects your interests. That's why it's there. It protects you from being imprisoned. It protects you from being murdered. It protects you when you make an agreement with another person. It enforces that that agreement. And beyond that, there's not much that... it seems like everything else can be worked out among free individuals.
No, but so contract law, I think, is pretty clear. Your example was really good. But all of the other things you kind of glossed over, how does that actually work? Do you need a police force? Do you need, judges? Do you need, what does the government actually consist of?
And that's, here's a fun one. Would you be opposed to, would you be opposed to the idea of each city choosing what police force they wanted from competing institutions? Do you feel like that would be inherently immoral, or do you feel like that would create an environment where they attempt to outdo each other with better records of politeness? You know, for example, well, it costs more money, but SecureCorp, every single person has a live drop cam on them. And I think our community feels better with that. So we're going to vote. Hey, are we cool with spending $5,000 more per month for SecureCorp over Benefax? And they're like, yeah, we're going to go with SecureCorp. They're like, no, we can't afford SecureCorp, so we're going to go with Benefax. And it's like, okay, well, hopefully we'll be able to afford it, or let's put some pressure on them to get those drop cams installed, because there's a few more beatings than I would like. That sounds freaking rad. That sounds like progress. I love it.
You know, I don't know if I want to live in a libertarian world, but I certainly want to live in a Brian Brushwood's world. everything you describe sounds awesome.
And I guess, again, I'm not saying that it's going to happen. I'm not saying that it's even likely to happen. All I know is that what we're on track for is it can't happen. And that seems like a real bummer to me.
I don't know. You know, I think the world the way it is isn't working too badly. But that would be actually a whole other show discuss.
And actually, I'm very much on your side on this. If there's one thing I can't stand is the idea that the world is not the best it's ever been by every single measure. You read Steven Pinker's book Enlightenment Now. If you read Better Angels of Our Nature, if you read the Rational Optimist by Matt Ridley, you'll know that we live longer, happier, healthier lives by every single definition, by every ability to measure in all of human history. Yes, you can say that this car currently has an ugly paint job on it, but that doesn't mean that the car is bad. And especially if you read the Rational Optimist, and also Abundance is another good one. It's pretty clear that most of the good things and the progress we have is generated by the engine of competitive free markets. And so I want a free market of ideas. I want a free market of a literal free market.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on the free market. And I think anyone who is rational, even our, you know, socialists in France would agree that the free market is what propels us forward, what gives us progress. The question then becomes, how controlled does it have to be? And the answer is, maybe that's the actual answer to all of the political spectrum. It's that question. And if you answer it, you know where you stand, is how controlled does it have to be? And we are heading towards the conclusion of the show, but I do want to ask you again, because I don't feel I got a clear answer. where should the government get involved besides contract law, ensuring, you know, the validity of contract law of contracts in a libertarian's view? Because
now's a real good time for me to remind everyone that I don't speak for anyone but Brian Brushwood. I don't know what I'm talking about. Almost every fact I have mentioned is certainly wrong. and the answer to your question, Patrick, is I don't know. But the good
but
news.
But which ones do you know? There are some that you think, yes, in this case, that should be run by the government. Sorry, I'm not letting you off the hook. I want to know.
Well, that's a really good question. So here's a really good decision-making activity is to, when I was trying to figure out my voice in magic, I had a very hard time figuring out what I wanted to be. And so instead I figured out, what do I not want to be? And in fact, when you sign up to Bombfell or whatever, they say, what clothing brands would you never, ever wear? And then based on that, they get better and better. And in a search for the truth, I'm a magician, Patrick. It's like, what do I know about the truth and the proper place for government? But so I can't go straight there about what should they do, but I can definitely carve out what I don't like them doing and what I don't think they should be doing. And I think I've done my best to do that. And yes, there's a billion counterexamples and I'm wrong about all of them, but in general, in general, that is where the gravitational well is pulling me to believe that so much of the best parts of our world came from crazy people doing stuff that nobody believed was a good idea, and that many people used the force of law to stop. And that's not to say and wonderful things came from it. And it bums me out to consider all the things that might not happen because of those. And all that is not to say Brian wants everybody to do crazy things or be irresponsible and all that stuff. You know, it's just like my, I suspect more good comes from more free interaction of ideas and whenever possible. And again, let's go back to that word, whenever possible, let's keep the government involved as little as we can, both with our junk and our pocketbooks.
It's really interesting that you are, you know, you yourself have explored things that, you know, normal, I don't know how to put it exactly, but you have an unconventional job and we say parkour.
I'm picking up the thread of what you're talking about. So
no, I know what I'm getting at. Sorry, but I want to make that point. What I'm getting at is in a normal way of viewing your life, you might have. I mean, you were for a point you had a normal job. And if you hadn't considered other avenues, you might not have become what you are today. And it seems like there's a parallel between that and the view on society where, well, maybe we don't have to be the squares on a societal level. Let's think of other things that you might not have considered because the laws or the things are telling you not to. So I think
that's a really, really good point, is because back to that point of you don't need freedom to do the smart thing. And I've done a lot of dumb things. Some have not worked out well, and I have paid the price. And sometimes other people have paid the price, and I have had to make things right with those other people. But, man, when I think of so many nutty things I did that yielded insane results, I'm thankful that there was a moment. I wrote the book on fire eating because nobody had written a good book on fire eating. It was all filled with crazy talk and insane. So I was like, I'm going to talk to scientists. I'm going to talk to fire engineers. I'm going to talk to everyone. I'm going to write the definitive book on fire eating. And I did it. And I sold a few. And then I started going to different venues, and I noticed that every single municipality has a different set of laws about what they allow when it comes to an open flame on stage. Sometimes you're able to do bar flare tricks and do fire blasts. Other places, you have to have a performance license or whatever. Sometimes you have to be a pyrotechnician, which is insane because pyrotechnics involves gunpowder. But it occurred to me like, oh, man, you know what I could do? Since I'm the guy who wrote the book on fire eating, I could create the United States Association of Fire Eaters. I could design a set of best practices, and I could start writing letters to every municipality. And I'll bet there's a lot of city council people that would love to back the idea of this and make this a unified thing. And I realized, oh, what I'm describing is starting a union and using the force of law to enrich myself and to dictate power. And the whole time I'd be able to talk about, oh, we're saving so many lives. I'm so great. I'm doing a great thing while enriching myself. And I think that temptation, that realization that that's a really thing that could happen is part of what fuels my, I don't know, it felt immoral to me. And so, I don't know, even if there's good intentions, I think you can find yourself getting caught up in perverse consequences.
Mm. Okay, well, I think that applies to pretty much everything anyone has ever said. So it's a good moral end to that discussion we've had, I think. All right. Anything else you want to add about, like, be kind to your local libertarian? They're not a monster.
Of all the peoples to be kind to, be kind to me. Don't think, don't be angry. It's okay if I'm wrong. If you talk to me on Twitter, at Schwood, S-H-W-O-O-D, I'm happy to respond. But one thing everybody loves to do is to tell me what I think. And if I'm an expert in one thing, it's what I think. So I don't need you to tell me what I believe, and it won't yield much.
Well, you know what? I think the listeners of this show are people who are used to being cordial to those they disagree with. At least that's what we try to do. So I'm sure everything is going to be perfectly fine. And you should go follow Schwood on Twitter. And what other places do you have stuff that you do and that people can find? Because let's not forget, you are not the libertarian official speaker of the U.S.
Yes, yes.
You have a job.
No. I'm a fire eating magician who shoves nails in his eyes, and you can learn card tricks from me at youtube.com/scamschool. I am also on a quest with my buddy to become the ultimate gentleman, warrior, and scoundrel at The Modern Rogue. If you go to youtube.com/modernrogue, and in fact, we even started doing daily articles at themodernrogue.com. I talk movies and stuff with Tom Merritt at Cord Killers, and do comedy and on Night Attack and with Justin Robert Young, who I also do the Weird Things podcast with Andrew Bain. That's a lot of stuff.
That is a lot of stuff, but everything will be available. Well, you know what? Just go to his Twitter account. That is kind of like a card, people's cards now. So I do link the Twitter account of all of my guests on the show notes. And in this case, it's super easy. It's Schwood, like brushwood, but
yeah,
without
but
the bra.
Yeah, there is no C in Schwood.
Exactly. There is no C in Schwood. Remember that. My name is Patrick Veja. As I said at the beginning, my Twitter handle is not Patrick. I'm also not Patrick on Facebook and Instagram. You can find this show at FrenchSpin.com. But above all else, if you believe the show is interesting, entertaining, I would like, how do I libertarianismly say that I want your money? I guess I just say it. Go give me your money.
Oh, no, yeah, that's the most honest way, is you say, hey, what you receive has value to you, then you can free exchange support it. Because guess what? The government ain't going to pass no law causing this to happen forever. You got to take action, my friends. Give this man some cash.
Until the government puts it into law that the Phileas Club should be granted money by someone, you can support me, and that's how I pay for the everything that I do. It's at patreon.com/thephileasclub. The link is also in the show notes. Thank you so much to all of the people who already support me, and thank you so much to those who are considering it right now. If you have any comments or anything, you can leave them at frenchspin.com on the website, or just, you know, come talk to us on Twitter. And I think that's going to be it. We will be back with a regular episode, if all goes well, in a couple of weeks. Until then, thank you so much, Brian, for being with us, and I'll talk to all of you in the audience in a couple of weeks. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping
and 365-day returns.